It's Audiomo 2020, Day 28. After a rather hectic war, you'd think that Eileen would have just settled down for a quiet life, but far from it. In these recordings, Eileen goes from being a hotelier to the Queen of Scrap.
I was sent back to Britain, I think it was late June, maybe early July, and my husband assumed that I would be demobbed straight away. And because he was the son of the man with the riding school, bang opposite Fighter Command, they'd managed to convert the bothy over the stables into a little flat for us. So I was allowed to sleep out if I wanted. And of course, he only came home on the odd occasions. So I'd stay either in the mess or occasionally sleep out. And I found myself pregnant. But because he wouldn't have been demobbed until something like March of the next year, I didn't tell anyone, and I stayed in till the end, till December, by which time I think I was, 5 months pregnant. And I actually was demobbed early January of 1946. My son was born in the March. And my husband was demobbed just soon after that. And then we both had to decide how we were going to earn a living. My husband had been trained in the film business, but there were no films being made. I, with a child, no way could ever go back to work in London in those days. So I took up working in the office for my father-in-law at the stables. It was a very viable stables because eventually the films then began to start again and they did all the horses for the films because they were near all the film studios, Denham, Pinewood, etc., Elstree. And my father-in-law trained Elizabeth Taylor for National Velvet. So I stayed there for a while, and then by chance a relative had a hotel in Devon, met us and said they were going to buy another one, would we like to come and run the hotel? So we fell into the hotel business. And that was 1948, so we had to learn quickly how to cook, how to look after people. And of course, it was still red petrol. There were not many visitors, and this hotel was right on the top of Burston Moor in North Devon, looking over the Atlantic. So there was not much passing trade, the occasional sales rep, and the farmers used to use the bar. But then we managed to get contacts with the Territorial Army, who were going to camp at Cleve Camp near Bude. And fortunately, they found us. We managed to get in and do all their regimental dinners. That's when I first met Ted Heath, who was a colonel in the HSC regiment. Met quite a lot of interesting people. Colin Cole, who was Garter King of Arms. And we stayed there from 48 to 52 when the people who owned it decided to go to South Africa. They sold the hotel, so they sold this one as well. So we sold ourselves out of a job. But a friend who'd previously, because my husband had a semi-pro dance band as a hobby when we were in London, and he'd been to stay with us and knew we were turned into good caterers, he asked us to go and run the Winter Gardens at Ventnor on the Isle of Wight. So we went there and worked for him there, and then we were upgraded to do the banqueting in London. Then another finance company took over and he looked as though he'd be moved out. So we moved to Simmons Hotels and we started off in Reading at a tough, rough sort of place, which we upgraded. Ended up at Swindon, running a big hotel there. And that's when I took my Hotel and Catering Institute exams because they said anybody with 8 years' experience would get a direct entry into the new professional body, the Hotel and Catering Institute. So I applied and they turned me down because I was a woman. They thought I only did the flowers. So I said, I'll take the exams. They said, you've got to do 4 years training. I said, no, I'll take them in the six subjects. And I did. In March, they told me that I'd have to take the exam and I took it in June in the subjects. And in September, they wrote and told me that I'd passed, but I got the top marks in Great Britain. Made me laugh because it proved my point that experience works. And Because of that, many of the brewers offered us tenancies, and that's how we got our first own business in Wiltshire, in the village of Bratton, under the Salisbury Plain, near the White Horse at Westbury. And that was our first big business, the Duke at Bratton. And that's where I started to learn Spanish, because we couldn't get people, English people or Welsh people or Scottish people, come and work as waiters. So we were allowed to apply to a hotel that we stayed in Spain, in Torremolinos. And we worked our way through 10 of their young waiters and gave them English training. I taught them English, and I had to learn Spanish to defend myself, as it were. And I got to love the language. And it was quite funny, because I always used to take the waiters to other hotels on their day off occasionally to give them a bit of experience. And I took one of them, called Pedro, to the God at Arms at Swindon that we'd been running. And when I was there, the girls that I'd worked with, the waitresses, said, "Oh, madam, there's two Spaniards here staying, and they don't know any English, and they're trying to find someone to help them." So they said, "Why don't you go and talk to them?" So I said, "Okay." So this young peasant boy and myself went searching for them. And of course, I stupidly forgot the siesta. And I eventually tracked them down to their bedroom. And I knocked on the door, and they said, "¿Quién está?" "Who's there?" This deep voice. I said, "Friend of Spain." So he said, "Enter, friend of Spain." And we went in, and there was the husband and wife in bed. And I remember he'd got a hat on his head. He must have been bald or something. This man was obviously a rich man. And I introduced Pedro, and he'd never met anybody like that. But anyhow, this man said, "Ah, perhaps you can help me. Will you act as my interpreter? I buy scrap steel from Britain, and I've been buying it from a scrap metal merchant in Swindon. I buy auto body offcuts in No. 4 bales." This was all news to me. I didn't know anything about scrap metal. So I said, "I don't think my Spanish is good enough to deal with interpreting you and a lawyer," because you wanted a lawyer. But I said, "The man who gave me my first lessons in Spanish when I was at the Duke Hotel is a friend of mine." And I rang him up and I put the two in touch, and he acted as the interpreter for this man. And I thought that was the end of it. 2 weeks later, I came down the stairs in the hotel at Bratton, and there was Señor Obigofo, this man who used scrap metal, melted it down, added all sorts of other metals to it, and turned it into knives and things for motor cars, in sort of springs and very important, you know, strong metal. He was sitting in the lounge bar with his wife. And I went up and said, "Hello, what are you doing here?" "Oh," he said, "I think you're a good businesswoman. Will you come and work for me?" I said, "What do you mean?" "Oh, I want you to be your purchasing officer for scrap metal in Great Britain. We're not going to use that man anymore, and I need it." And this was in Maggie Thatcher's time, and she was issuing export licenses for scrap metal, because we needed a lot of metal for rebuilding. So she only allowed a certain amount to go out, and you had to get an export license. And he had got export licenses for his particular thing, but he needed the source. So I said, "Okay." And he said, "Right, you must fly out to where I live in the Basque country, and we will find a lawyer and you will sign a contract." So I went out there and I saw this man once more. He showed me his factory and this enormous thing where the metal was extruded and then made into other things. It's fascinating. It was all completely new to me. And then we signed this agreement, and I said, "By the way, how much do you want me to get?" "Oh, 4,000 tons a month," he said, "and I'll pay you 14 shillings a ton." So I was a bit nonplussed as to where I was going to get this from. So I returned back home with this contract. I found out through transport companies, how I would transport it. And then I remembered Press Steel, the company at Swindon that I helped once when they'd had a big strike with communists. I'd let them have a room so the press didn't know they were going to meet the communist union people. And I rang them up and I said, can you help me? I want some auto body F cuts and number 4 bales. Oh, yes, he said, you can have 1,000 tons a month. So that's my first 1,000. And then I remembered that my husband's mother was friendly with someone whose son was chairman of the Chamber of Shipping in London. So I rang him up and I said, do you know any scrap metal merchants? Yes, he said, John Lowenstein. He works out of Dagenham and he's really reputable. And this was a very smart young Jewish gentleman. So I rang him up and he couldn't understand this 40-odd-year-old dear in Wiltshire who wanted him to buy another 3,000 tons of scrap metal every month. Right, he said, you better come up and have lunch with me in London. He said, carry the Times or wear a buttonhole and meet me at, and he gave the name of a very well-known restaurant. So I arrived there in a taxi. There he was waiting, very dapper young man, very full of himself. He said, I'm very well known at this restaurant, and we had to go down a large staircase. And at the bottom was the restaurant manager in his morning suit, standing there, smiling away at us. And when we got to the bottom, this man flung his arms round my neck. Hello, Mrs. Young Husband. Oh, wonderful to see you again. And it happened to be a young Frenchman, and he and his wife had been sent to the Goddard Arms at Swindon to start their training in England under me when Peter and I were running the Goddard Arms at Swindon. And, of course, collapse of fat party, as it were, and Mr. Lowenstein had to take back seat. We got a free lunch out of that. Anyhow, it worked very successfully for 3 years. And then Franco, because this man lived in the Basque country that was anti-Franco regime, said, right, we don't accept any foreign steel unless I give an import license. And of course, he would not give an import license to anyone in the Basque country. So after it was nearly 4 years, that little part of my empire dissolved, but I'd still formed myself in a little company. So we did other things with it. We did packed herbs for Fortnum and Masons and still ran the hotel, but my husband had his first heart attack, so we semi-retired and I acted as a consultant for breweries and went round the country helping them put hotels that were not making a profit right, because that's where that training that I got at school all those years before in bookkeeping and accountancy came into its own, because I will never forget the benefits I got from learning at an early age how important it is to keep control of expenses and income, which I still do. I still keep a handwritten tabular ledger. I can use the computer. I could do it online, but it keeps my mental arithmetic going.